Warning, the Stone Age Gamer includes a lot of bad language. Cover your mother f***ing ears.
Good evening and welcome to episode 221 of the Stone Age Gamer podcast for the week of September 28th, 2018. I am Chris Randazzo and with me in a...
Start over.
And with me as always is Inner Tube Simulator Dan Ryan.
I am certainly... totally tubular, if nothing else, Chris.
You am. It is time for the September 10, 2030. And September is a popular month for game releases, apparently, because there is a lot to talk about. Before we go any further, here's your weekly reminder that you can email us at mail@geekade.com. Just include the word Stone Age Gamer in the subject line. You can let us know what you think of our show, what topics you would like us to discuss in the future, or just say hello, because we always want to hear from you, the listener. Dan, it's been... a little bit since we've actually done a podcast together.
Even though
we have spoken in the 2 weeks since we last recorded.
We have. We've touched.
Since we've last recorded.
We've been somewhat uncomfortably close.
You did join us briefly at our panel at AVGC. Right. That was fun.
That was fun. That was a good call.
Glad you answered the phone.
I was out in my backyard drinking beer while my kids were having a play date. I was glad I was able to contribute to that. But we did the Pedathon, Chris.
We did, just a couple of days ago. We sat down with Matt Ramo and played Ninja Turtles. And
poorly.
Failed. Failed.
Oh, God, did Turtles. We do bad.
Man, screw that game.
Nah, man. Like, you would have thought after 3 hours that we would have... like, we hit the same stopping point each time. We just didn't learn, Chris.
We just didn't get any better past that spot.
No, that was as good as we were.
Spot in level 3, and we weren't alone. In fact, of all of the games played, only one person beat their game, and that was Jonathan. And that's because he didn't play it on hard mode.
Oh,
if he had played it on hard mode, he probably would not have beaten that game.
He'd still be playing.
He would, because he was playing Mega Man for Game Gear, and. Yeah, that game was tough, but when you put it on normal mode,
right,
it is extremely forgiving with the amount of damage that things do to you. Like, he was fighting a robot master, I don't remember which one, but every single time he got hit, it only took away one slice of life, which, that does not happen in Mega Man games.
Mm-mm.
No. Now, he did die a handful of times because of why we figured the game was going to be hard, with, like, the... he'd just be walking and there'd be a blind jump and he'd jump and then there'd be spikes there.
Right.
There's just no way to know that until you've done it once.
Right. And then you do it and you can learn it. And
yeah,
that was kind of the thing, like we were saying about that game, is that just by the very nature of it being on such a small screen.
Like, and not optimized for said small screen.
Right. Yeah. It was just going to be difficult. But man, we made some pretty bold predictions, Chris, and we look stupid.
I mean, that's just my natural state of being.
I mean, that's true. That's very, very true.
I
don't know if that's mine, but yeah.
How much did you catch of what happened throughout the rest of the day?
God, I really unfortunately could not catch much. I was trying to, because I had to leave. It was my uncle's 70th birthday, and I had to go bake a cake for it. And so I had to leave North Jersey to get back to South Jersey to bake the cake, to go out to dinner, to do all of that stuff. So I had to leave right away after we got done at 1. And I caught a little bit of the Double Dragon stream as I was driving home. But, you know, not that I'm advocating for watching videos and driving, but I was listening to it. But, you know, driving on the turnpike, if you have Sprint, there are areas where it's just like, no, I'm just not gonna work anymore. And so like it was cutting out, and like it's kind of asking a lot to have your phone update a map and play a live
and stream live video
while I'm hurtling at 90 miles an hour down the New Jersey Turnpike. So, you know, to do all of that. My wife's looking at me now too, because she heard me talking about. I was listening, honey. I wasn't watching. I was listening. No, I didn't. I said they were playing Double Dragon. I knew that because they said We're playing Double Dragon, Billy Bear Hands. So
they got farther in that than I expected them to, really.
They did do pretty well. Well, not they. We predicted that they weren't going to do well, though, right?
They did not get to the end.
No, well, no.
Dave did not get it past level one.
No, he didn't.
Sean made it all the way to the last level, not to the last boss, mind you.
Sure.
But he made it all the way, most of the way through, until Egypt finally just murdered him.
I did catch a little bit of Evan and Angie. I caught like the last 5 minutes or so of them playing Altered Beast. I really thought they were going to get through that. I really did.
Yeah, I was, I'm glad I picked that amount of time for that game, because I had a feeling that it was going to be, it was tougher than we were thinking it was. And Angie's last ditch, Sonic the Hedgehog style bear spinny ball jump directly into a pit right at the end was pretty spectacular. That was awesome. Zelda's Adventure, I did not beat it, which means I got to try again next year.
I'm really surprised by that.
Well, I probably could have in the amount of time that was there. I had one major thing going against me and one major thing going for me. The major thing going against me was an hour and a half into my playthrough, the CDI decided it was not going to play the game anymore.
Mm, that's tough.
I went and I was like getting a heart container and it was just like, poof, you're done. Kicked me back to the beginning, said the disc was dirty. So we cleaned the disc and all my save data was gone. So I was like, all right, cool. We're starting from scratch.
Mm.
But I did have... I still don't know how he found us, but the world speed record holder for Zelda's Adventure for CDI was in the chat.
Really?
And was coaching me. Sent me a map, and Genghis was communicating with him and everything, and he was watching me play, and it was pretty awesome. So that was really cool, and he was a big help, but I got stuck in this one dungeon towards the end of the game. Mm-hmm. And I had used up all my rubies, because they're not rupees in this one, they're rubies.
Naturally.
I was just having a real hard time with it. And I was pretty demoralized by the fact that there was just no physical way I was going to beat this game in that time. So
right.
Going to have to try that again next year. Dean is actually right now live on Twitch as we're recording this, playing Bubsy 2 again to try to polish that off the same way he did Bubsy 1 last year after he failed on the stream. I got to tell you, I was having a lot of fun with Silver Surfer. Jordan
was so
hard. I had never really played it before, you know, past a couple of seconds before.
Sure. It's so hard.
Same thing with Zelda's Adventure. Like, I had played that game before, but I was not prepared for just how much worse it is than Faces of Evil and Wand of Gamelon. Mm. That game is just absolute trash.
It is degrees worse.
Silver Surfer, though, is a... I was watching Jordan play it for a little bit, and he was getting pretty frustrated, and he asked if I wanted to try. I was like, you know what, I kind of do. And so I was just kind of pounding away at it and trying to learn some patterns, and it had been a long time since I'd really tried to learn patterns of a shooter.
Right.
And it was going well. I mean, we didn't beat any levels, but
no.
we beat some like mini-bosses in levels. We made it through chunks of levels, so that was pretty cool.
That's something. That's not but nothing, Chris.
I gotta say, probably some of the most fun that I had on the entire stream was Dean didn't get any sleep the night before.
Which is great.
And he decided to stay up all the way until his Fantasy Zone playthrough, which was like 2 a.m. or something like that. And I was pretty delirious by that point. So the two of us just kind of lost our minds while Dean was playing Fantasy Zone. And I don't remember a lot of it, but I remember laughing a lot.
That's excellent.
But we beat our goal. We raised over $3,100. Our goal was $3,000. So
there you go. I mean, that's really what it's what it comes down to, is that everybody had fun. Yeah, it was a blast. You know, even though we all did terribly, it was a good time. We raised money, and we're thinking about what we're going to do for the next one. Like, I am going to start practicing Ninja Turtles, because I feel like we need to, because this is what, 3 or 4 years in a row now?
This is our third year.
The third year. Okay.
What did we play the first year?
I couldn't make the first year, and I don't remember why. Oh,
okay. All right. And last year we did Comic Zone.
Right. I was away that first year.
Comic Zone is a fool's errand. That's not even something I could conceive of beating. I know I've gotten further than we got at the Pedathon in Ninja Turtles myself as a kid. Yeah. So
I feel like we really need to, Chris, take this next year and practice those games so that we can beat both of them next year.
I'm hoping that my save file lasts until next year on Zelda so I can just pick up where I left off. I don't want to do that again.
I mean, that's fair. That is fair.
All right, we have a lot to talk about.
We do, so let's talk about this Nintendo Direct. Or do you want to talk about the PlayStation Classic first?
I mean, I feel like we have a whole episode to talk about. We should do an episode on what we think the remaining games of the PlayStation Classic are. But
okay.
Actually, you know what? That's probably not going to happen because they'll probably announce them before October's over, and we're doing 31 days of Halloween through October. So PlayStation Classic, huh?
I'm not.
Went ahead and called it classic.
Yeah, like, I'm not surprised.
Not even trying.
No, I'm not surprised. I'm also not interested.
Yeah, so far I'm not interested either. Like,
the game list is underwhelming.
But we only have a fraction of the game list, so I mean, who knows what's left?
Well, here's the problem that I have with it. The PlayStation Classic is going to ship with non-DualShock controllers, correct?
That's true, so that really does limit.
So,
like, Gran Turismo is probably not going to be on
that. I'm not interested. Ape Escape is not going to be on that. Mm. Like, that's a
Symphony of the Night
move.
Is a shoe-in, but that's coming to PS4.
Sure, like, I don't. That's not enough to get me to buy this thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I don't think this has the same appeal as, like, the NES or Super NES Classic. It just doesn't.
You know, like, it's $100. Which, okay, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, there's more technology in that. I get that one. I don't know how much more technology there is, but it doesn't seem absurd to ask $100 for that.
Yeah, the price doesn't seem out of this world.
But the list of games that they've released so far is just underwhelming. Like, okay, Final Fantasy VII, sure. You know,
yeah, but I mean, you know, that's already on their current platform, yeah. And it's even coming to Switch. Like, Final Fantasy VII isn't one of those games that's been, you know, difficult to get your hands on or anything like that.
Tekken 3, like, okay, Tekken 3 is great, but there's been 900 versions of Tekken since then.
And I guess they're going after the same market that Nintendo went after with the NES Classic Edition. You know, just like, hey, let's play up on the nostalgia of this thing. Mm-hmm. But I really don't know if that nostalgia is properly there. You know what I mean?
It could be, but when
it
you're
could be, but I
when
think
you're
it might
going
be a
to be
early.
Missing things like Ape Escape, I mean, that is such a singularly PlayStation kind of thing with the DualShock controller, you know, with the dual analog sticks. Like, that was such a big deal, and to like. That just seems like a huge misstep.
It does. You know, I didn't see Soul Edge on that list. Again, that could show up. But, I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, what are the games that really defined the PlayStation era for me? And I have a hard time thinking of it.
Siphon like Filter, Metal Gear Solid, both need analog.
Yeah, I mean, geez, Metal Gear Solid, you're right. That wasn't on there. I mean, you could throw probably Mega Man Legends on there, but again, like, I'm not seeing the point of not doing the analog unless they're already thinking ahead, like, oh, and then next year we'll do the DualShock version,
right,
with a bunch of DualShock
and that's
games.
What it sounds like, and I don't care for that.
Yeah, that's just kind of gross right out of the gate. So.
I don't like that at all. You know, Ridge Racer, great. Jumping Flash, great. You know, fine, but
even the novelty of a tiny PlayStation, like the PS1, is probably going to be about the same size as this PlayStation Classic.
Right.
I have a PS1
and cheaper.
You know, that little thing was cool.
Yeah. And cheaper, and it has I can.
Yeah,
play
and to
everything.
Be fair, didn't that thing come out at around $100 bucks? The PS1, like when it came out.
Now it's not HDMI, you know, and that's a thing. But I would have to imagine there's a cable you can get that will fix that. I don't really see much of the point of this without the analog sticks. It's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you there.
So,
but I mean, if they threw the analog sticks in there, that probably would have had an effect on the price. And I'm sure the games that they're getting for this, like, you know, Final Fantasy VII, I don't think is a cheap game to license, you know, so.
I mean, probably not, but, like, so, I don't know. Looking back at that, it's got to have Twisted Metal, or at least Twisted Metal 2. You know.
Bubsy 3D, got to be.
Certainly good. Bubsy 3D. You know, like.
You know, are they going to get Chrono Cross on there, or are they going to get. I mean, what are they? What other big names are they going to get? Because that's the other thing that, you know, the NES Classic had was the big names like, you know, Contra and Double Dragon to slap on the outside of the box.
Right.
Like, Mega Man is on there.
Are you going to throw Spyro on the PlayStation Classic when you're trying to push the Spyro Remastered
thing? Spyro Remastered, yeah. And, like, everyone on the planet bought the Crash Bandicoot one.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't
want to
go back and play
thing.
Those games ugly now. I can buy them on my PS4 and they look way better. You know what I mean? Like, that's I don't know. It's kind of a weird. It's kind of a weird thing. Like, I can't do. I mean, I suppose you could do Resident Evil, but who hasn't played Resident Evil at this point? You know, like.
Well, you see that right there. That's one of those. That's one of those perfect games, I think. Resident Evil, like, you know, all of its hideous, bad voice acting glory, like. That's something that you would sell this on, you know.
But,
the same thing I would say even with the original Metal Gear Solid and, Oddworld Abe's Odyssey could be on there. Parappa the Rapper, is that already on there?
I don't know. They haven't announced. I don't think they've announced that yet. But like Parappa would be cool, and like the first Tomb Raider, I guess.
But I feel like when people do this, they're gonna like again with the lack of the DualShock controller. I think a lot of people are gonna be. Surprised that they're missing it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're gonna just buy it looking at it from that nostalgic perspective,
right.
And then get home and be like, huh, something's wrong here.
Right.
Where are all the games that I really want to play? But also I think this is just an era that is not as easy to go back to.
No, because it's ugly as
Nintendo
shit.
And Super Nintendo. Yeah, it's ugly as shit.
It's ugly as shit, and the games that I would want to go back to, like Resident Evil or Spyro, have been remastered, and I don't have to look at it that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 isn't going to be on here. There's no way they're getting all that music licensed.
Like that, and the Tony Hawk games are distinctly original PlayStation.
Yeah, they're a huge part of the PlayStation DNA. I don't know, Soul Blade has to be on there. Soul Blade just has to be on there.
I mean, Street Fighter Alpha 3...
Yeah, that could be on there, but, you know, again, Street Fighter.
But again, I can buy the Street Fighter collection and play that online. So
not the console version, which is admittedly the superior
version.
Sure,
but there is another option.
It's still Alpha 3, yeah. There is another option.
For me to do this on my current console where I don't have to drop an additional $100. You know, there's a certain things are really awesome when it happens, like that Capcom Beat 'em Up collection. Out of nowhere, so cool, games that are not readily available, really, you know, and again, some missteps on there, but for $20, you get 7 games, you know, they probably should have squeezed Final Fight 2 and 3 on there as well.
Yeah, but that's going to be beat-em-up collection,
sure,
too.
Sure, you know, but I mean...
Capcom's got enough to do that,
but they do, like, that's really awesome, and for $20, you know, I can't, there's not a new version of Final Fantasy or Knights of the Round for me to go and get. You know, Dragon's Crown is a different beast entirely. You know, that's a new thing. So that's not, you know, that's not a nostalgia thing. There's not a new Captain Commando. They didn't remaster that game. But
these things are, that Capcom Beat 'em Up bundle, when that showed up on the Nintendo Direct, I was just like, well, okay.
And a great price for it, you know, $20 for those games.
You may have my dollars.
Yeah.
I haven't bought it yet because I'm in the middle of a handful of other things. It's like, it's not going anywhere, and I'm not going to play it
right
now.
So why? I still haven't got the Street Fighter 30th collection.
I haven't
And
either.
I want it desperately.
It's just, I want to have it, but there's no way I'm going to play it right now because I'm in the midst of that's a good segue to talk about the Nintendo Online stuff. I obviously signed up for the service.
As did I? On the stream. Sorry. My kid couldn't get into the Splatfest because all of a sudden
you did that.
All of a sudden we had to pay for the Splatfest, like, at that moment. It was like, oh, well, this has to be done right now.
As an online service, it strikes me as a you get what you pay for. Yeah. You know, they said this was coming from the get-go. This wasn't a surprise to anyone. They were like, we're giving you this for free for a while, but eventually we're going to start asking for money. And it's like, all right, it's $20 a year for adequate at best online.
Yeah, I
rarely play online, robust. So I'm fine with
that. It's not robust, but I think it was $35 for us because it was the family package.
Oh, you did the family thing.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. That's a really cool
thing. Can we talk about the NES offerings?
We sure can.
It's a pretty awesome thing, I think, and it struck me, you know, like I knew it was coming, but it still struck me as a very un-Nintendo thing to do, because they've been charging $5 for those games. For each of
those. Every one of those was $5 pop. Except the ones that hadn't been re-released before. Like, we got ice hockey and friggin' pro wrestling.
Like, I was up in my, you know, in my, the kids' playroom. I was gonna say my playroom, it's not my playroom. In the kids' playroom, which is where the Switch is, like, playing pro wrestling on the TV and having a blast and was like, oh, I gotta go to the bathroom. I'm going to go play pro wrestling in the bathroom, and that's kind of awesome. I still hate the four little buttons. I don't care. I just don't like playing with them. They work, but...
Yeah, I'm used to them by now.
Used to them does not mean they're good.
Yeah, you know? No, I agree. I would still like to have a proper Joy-Con with a proper D-pad. I know Hori, I think, released one, but I don't like messing with third-party stuff, especially since you can't use it wirelessly. Like, it has to be attached to the system. Yeah. Said whatever. I'm used to those buttons enough, and I've gotten good enough with them that none of the games have been a problem for me.
I had a really hard time with Ghosts and Goblins trying to play that with those little buttons.
I'm not even messing with that one.
I've spent
all the time I ever need to with the NES port of that game.
I adore that game. I think I got up to the third stage or something like that.
I'll wait till they port the arcade version and I'll play that. I'll just not mess with the NES version ever again.
But there's a lot of really good games on there. Like to just jump in and be able to play Excitebike and Pro Wrestling and Donkey Kong and Tecmo Bowl. Tecmo Bowl, again, super unplayable with those four little fucking buttons. You know.
You know what? I did the Mega Man games with those buttons just fine. So... Mm-hmm. It's possible to just get good with them, but I you know, busted it open. I started playing it, and the first thing I did was turn on Super Mario Brothers to test what the emulation was like, because we talked about on the show, I've had problems with the Nintendo's emulation ever since the Wii. I think the Wii did a phenomenal job. Wii U did a piss poor job. Wii U was terrible with its NES emulation. And the NES Classic Edition looked beautiful, but all the sound was off. Like, just the sound effects were not right. The noise channel was not doing its job. And there was hideous button lag in it.
Yeah.
There is, at least on my TV, I've heard and I've been hearing some weird conflicting reports on this. Most people are saying, oh my God, there's no button lag in retro games on my TV, which is my situation. I was playing Super Mario Brothers like it was on a CRT, and I was astonished by it. But I've heard some people say, like, oh my God, I can't play this. The button lag is so terrible on the Pro Controller. It's great in handheld mode, but on my TV, it's awful. I don't know what I don't really know what the science is, because it's weird that that's happening to some people. And I haven't experienced it. It is the tightest I've ever played Nintendo games on an HD TV. It's amazing. Yeah. I feel like I could beat Punch Out with this thing. And that's, like, ridiculous to me. It's unheard of. Like, there is more button lag on the 3DS emulation of NES games.
Yeah.
So, the visuals
I am really sad Punch-Out was not on there.
Yeah, but it's coming. You know it is. There's no way
they're not
going
to include it. I have to imagine
it is. The visuals are... It's also the nicest looking I've ever seen these games. Mm-hmm. I slapped it into pixel perfect mode, and it's just amazing looking how perfect the colors are, how sharp everything is. I hate that you can't get rid of the button layout thing on the bottom of the screen. They have
I don't
to patch
care for that.
I don't know what the hell that's about. Like, okay, I get it. You press L and R to go to a pause. Like, why is that always there? What the hell is wrong with you?
Yeah.
The pixel perfect mode also in the NES Classic Edition, it stretches enough to fill the screen vertically. Mm-hmm. And it's not zoomed in at all on this. It's kind of got a black border around the whole thing, which is a little obnoxious. But The coolest thing that not everybody knows you can do is if you have a Japanese account, you can go to the Japanese eShop and buy Japanese products. And if you have Nintendo Switch Online and you have a Japanese account, you can go download Family Computer Online and have that app and just log into it with your American code, which is fine. And now you have access to all the Famicom versions of these games,
which is kind of cool.
It's amazing for the box art alone, because the layout is super cool and you get to see all the box art. But it's also like some of these games were disc system games and they're flawlessly animated in HD. So I've been playing through Legend of Zelda for the Famicom disc system, which is something I've never done. And it's really cool to see, to really hear the differences. You know, visually, it's almost identical. There's a different typeface for all the words in the game, besides the ones that are in Japanese. But like all the numbers, they look a lot more computery. You know, they're thin lines and stuff. But the sounds are so different. A lot of the music sounds different. And it's really cool. In ice hockey, there's actually a totally different song that plays while you're playing the game.
Really?
Totally different song. Title screen for pro wrestling looks totally different. I mean, there's so many little differences. Super Mario 3 has got a handful of differences, including just being harder. It's a really cool thing to be able to do, especially for free. It's part of your account. And right now, the games list is the same, but you know, the Famicom Mini was different than the NES Mini. So I would have to believe that at some point there's going to be some Famicom games that show up on there that don't show up in the NES version. So
you would have to imagine at some point, yeah.
Yeah. So I mean, here that's a really cool perk to this thing. As a service to get NES games, I would pay $20 a year for. The online service I don't particularly care for. I've heard, you know, even playing these NES games online isn't fantastic.
I haven't even tried that.
I haven't either, because I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. I don't want to play pro wrestling against somebody, you know.
Karen and I, unless I'm in the same room. I want to play it against somebody in the same room.
Right, right.
Karen and I were playing Dr. Mario together the other day. It's nice to have Dr. Mario on the Switch. And there's, you know, again, no lag. It just plays perfectly. Two-player mode. Boom, done.
Yep, Yoshi played really, really well.
Yeah, Yoshi's great. I'm going to finally spend time with River City Ransom, which is a... I'm writing about this now. I wrote an article this morning. It's probably going to go up tomorrow or the next day on the SAG blog about the fact that a lot of folks were complaining about the number of games that are on there. Like, oh man, for this money, you should get blah, blah, blah. And there should be like hundreds of games immediately. And I thought, no. I can see where you're coming from. But if you think about it, this is a lot smarter because one, it's getting me to play games that I wouldn't ordinarily play, you know, like, I know River City Ransom is one of those games I've always known I should be playing, but I haven't because I didn't get it when I was a kid and I don't have the nostalgia fall back on and I've just never really put the time into it. But now it's just there. I have it on my system now. It was given to me as part of the service I signed up for. So I'm going to spend some time with that game. I'm going to play through River City Ransom as soon as I'm done playing the Famicom version of Zelda, you know.
It is a dope game.
Yeah, I spent some time with Balloon Fight. I would never have bought Balloon Fight again.
No.
But now that it's on there for free, I spent like an hour or so just messing with the single player mode. Like, this game really is fun.
It is fun. But not something you would drop $5 on.
Exactly. I tortured Jonathan and Patty with Ice Climber at the Pedathon. After they beat Mega Man, they were like, oh no, all right, what are we gonna do with our extra time? And I didn't want to, you know, hook up a different system and the Switch was hooked. I was like, I know what to do. You guys are playing Ice Climber together. They hated it because that game sucks. You know, I've never played soccer for NES before. I own it. I've never played it. Now I have. It's garbage, but whatever. It was probably neat at the time.
Sure, it was.
Same thing with baseball. There's way better baseball games. But you know what? It was cool to hear the little Hip Tanaka jingles and stuff coming out of that game. These kinds of things, like the games that they're coming out with a few at a time, this little drip, is really smart because not only does it kind of draw attention to the few games that do come out and give you time to play them, it also doesn't take away from everything else that's happening on the platform, which is always, that's been one of Nintendo's problems for a long time, is like third parties can't compete with their stuff on their platform.
Right.
You know, if Nintendo releases a Mario game, anything else anyone releases that month isn't going anywhere.
Right. It literally doesn't matter that it came out.
Yeah. It just completely engulfs it because they don't have the same, I guess, you know, they just have the same third party factory that works with like PlayStation. You know, you can have a third party game release the same month as God of War because they're the audience on the PlayStation is just like, well, you know, I'll get God of War and I'll get this.
Right.
But traditionally speaking with Nintendo platforms, it's like third parties never really dive whole hog in to make something unique and impressive.
Mm-hmm.
And then those things that they do make are always overshadowed by Nintendo's super polished first party stuff.
Yeah, I mean, so, really the only things that you can even point to where it was like, oh my goodness, were like, I've got, I don't even know if it's things like Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
That's like the one third party exclusive Nintendo thing at the time where it was like, oh, son of a bitch. Like, exactly. This could have come out the same month as a new Mario, and it would have been okay.
Exactly. Because that kind of stuff just hasn't happened on Nintendo platforms. But that's why I think this is smart, because if you're putting all these like top tier old school NES games that people have a lot of nostalgia for, and especially they just show up on your system for essentially free, and if you have the service,
yeah, that's great.
Then who's going on the eShop to buy like the latest indie game or whatever?
Right.
But I think this is a really smart way to temper that. So as a $20 a year service to play a bunch of NES games, I'm very happy with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With more coming, and that's the great thing.
Yeah. Now, if it is adding to it three titles a month.
Yeah. If it is a steady trickle and they're good titles, you know, like if we end up with some really like high quality stuff, then that's awesome. If we're getting, you know, like one, like if we get next month, if we get Metroid and then two games nobody gives a shit about. Like then,
I think that might be exactly what's happening next month.
And that might be, you know, but I mean, because also keep in mind, at some point you run out of the, like once you run out Punch-Out and Metroid and Kid Icarus, it's like, okay, we've got the big ones out. Now what are we releasing that people care about? Then you can start to hopefully highlight some stuff that like, this was a really cool game that nobody played.
Well, that seems to be what they're doing. Like, all right, so they have October, November, December planned out. And I love the way these are put together. Mm-hmm. So October is Super Dodgeball.
Mm-hmm.
That's your big game that everyone has the nostalgia for. Then you have NES Open Tournament Golf, which is a pretty sweet golf game for NES. And Solomon's Key, a really weird, awesome puzzle platform.
Yeah. Pretty cool.
I'll play all three of those.
Yeah, pretty cool.
And, you know, none of those are eating into one another. That's a cool selection.
Right.
November is Metroid, hooray. Mighty Bomb Jack, which I've played all of 5 minutes of. I know it's got a cult following, and I've never spent more than a few minutes with it because I didn't like it when I played it.
Yeah.
I'm going to give that game another chance now, because why not? It's going to be free on my system.
It'll be there.
And Twinbee, which was actually never released on NES in America, so that's kind of cool.
That's very cool.
And then December, you've got, I love December. December is Wario's Woods, a puzzle game that I love.
Mm-hmm.
Adventures of Lolo, another game I've never spent the time with that I should have. And Ninja Freaking Gaiden.
Yeah, that's big.
So, I love these game selections. I think they're so smart. You've got something that everyone has nostalgia for, and then two other weirdo titles every month. And that's awesome. Keep that going. Keep that pace up. Three games a month. Throw them on there. Have one big game that I can't wait to replay Ninja Gaiden on this thing.
Yeah.
But I also can't wait to really sink my teeth into Adventures of Lolo, because I've never done that before.
All I'm saying, Chris, is that at some point, the one game that I do really want to play online is RC Pro-Am.
It's not going to happen.
Give me multiplayer RC Pro-Am. That's all I want.
I mean, RC Pro-Am 2 was multiplayer, and it was a great game, but again, never going to happen.
I know. I'll even take Super Off-Road at this point.
Oh, I'd love Super Off-Road. That would be awesome. Oh my God, I love that game.
Right? Online Super Off-Road? That'd be really cool.
I love that game so much.
That'd be very cool.
Oh God. If they could get the Rare games on there, and if there's any chance that that could happen, that would just be amazing. Mm. Heck, I'd love to see all the Black Box games show up on there, but, you know, I don't know if they can really emulate the Zapper Gun.
I don't know. Give me Slalom. I'm excited.
Seriously. Good times. And I'm not buying those controllers.
No.
Sorry, guys.
Nope.
You didn't sell me on the $60 NES controllers.
No, that's crazy. $20.
All right. Back to business. We got to rapid fire through this, rest of this Nintendo Direct, because we were asked, we were at the Direct air, they're like, oh no, we got to wait a couple of weeks before Chris can talk about the Nintendo Direct. And so I'm sorry we can't dedicate as much time to it, but, you know, we have lots to say.
Sure.
So, all right, Luigi's Mansion 3. That was a pretty cool way to kick it off.
Yeah, very cool.
Luigi's Mansion 3. Huzzah, looks great. Kirby's Epic Yarn coming to 3DS.
Great.
Sure, go for
whatever.
It.
Whatever, I mean, sure.
Game of show for me, Katamari Reroll.
Yep.
Yes. The original Katamari is getting an HD remaster, and it's coming to Switch, and I could not possibly be happier.
Yeah. Now, is that exclusive to Switch, or?
It's freaking me out, because so far it's the only platform it's been announced for, and I don't know why.
I mean, that's awesome.
I mean, it's
great. If it's
great.
Exclusive to Switch, I'm buying it. On Switch.
Yeah, I'm surprised it's not also at least on PlayStation, because that's where it's from. You know, it's a
right.
PlayStation 2 game. And it's nice that this game is finally coming to Nintendo's audiences, because it should do well there. I can't imagine it won't. I'm buying the hell out of it. I would buy it on Switch no matter what platform it came out on, because I want this game with me everywhere I go.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I'm super stoked about that. Yoshi's Crafted World, that title wound up being leaked at some point, and you know, it makes sense. I'm kind of shocked that they didn't announce any sort of Labo crossover with it, since the whole thing seems to be about crafting, but I'm all for it. I think it looks great. I loved Yoshi's Woolly World. I thought that was a really good platformer. Mm-hmm. I know this isn't your cup of tea, but I'm really excited about this one. I think it looks wonderful. New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And look, this is not a bad game. Out of all the new Super Mario Bros. Games, it is far and away the best one, but I just don't understand why this is being ported to this platform.
It's a way to get another Mario game on the system. That's
it. Yeah. And like, this game didn't... This was the best new Super Mario Bros. Game, and I think the worst selling new Super Mario Bros. Game, so mm-hmm. I get it. It's just like, man, I really am done with the new Super Mario Brothers games. I want them to do something super creative with them. Like, Mario Odyssey was bursting with joy and creativity and imagination, and it's like,
and then
Super Mario Brothers
thing.
U.
Yeah.
And also, you know what? This spawned this whole Bowserette thing that's been going on the internet.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah.
And they should have seen this coming. They should have seen, once they gave Toadette a crown and made her turn into Peachette, I don't understand what that means.
Yeah.
But the fact that they made that a power-up that people could start slapping on other characters, I've seen some awful, awful imagery from this in the last couple of days. Anyway, moving on. Town.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And doesn't interest me, but I always love to see Game Freak branch out beyond Pokemon.
Yeah.
Because usually that winds up good. Sometimes it ends up in Pulse Man, but sometimes you end up with something like Harmonite, which I thought was great.
Or Tembo the Badass Elephant.
Which I still haven't played. I heard that's awesome.
It's great. Yeah, I like it quite a bit.
This was a huge surprise to me. Crystal Chronicles, you know, was announced that's getting remastered for Switch and PS4, and that's cool. And they were like, all right, Chocobo's Dungeon, that's coming to Switch. Final Fantasy 15 Pocket Edition, that's coming to Switch. That funky cool remaster of Final Fantasy 12, that's coming to Switch. And also Final Fantasy 10, Final Fantasy 9, and holy crap, Final Fantasy 7.
It's about time.
That's one of those things. I think these are all digital only, which breaks my heart, because I want Final Fantasy 7 on a cartridge so badly.
Yeah, well, oh god, I can't imagine how many carts it would have to be at this point. It was four fucking CDs.
It was three CDs.
Three CDs. Yeah, I guess eight was
just the, yeah, four, eight was
or
four
nine
CDs.
Was four, something like
but
that.
But the eight and nine were both four, I think. But seven was three CDs. And this was the game that split Square from Nintendo.
Yep.
This was the game where they ran ads about like making fun of platforms with cartridges. Like, this game was a huge turning point in the whole Nintendo being the market leader. When they lost Square and Final Fantasy, they lost. This was a huge turning point for them. And the game has never showed up in any flavor on any Nintendo platform. For all these years, it's just completely eluded the system, even after Square and Nintendo made up. But now Octopath Traveler set the freaking world on fire, and Square opened up an entire division for porting RPGs to Switch.
Yep.
No, they're like, that Final Fantasy VII, finally on a Nintendo platform. And I'm going to give it one more try. You've got one more try, Final Fantasy VII, because it's on the Switch, and I'll be able to, you know, just stop and start at my leisure with no dicking around or anything like that. I will give that game one more try to get me. But that's it. So.
You really got to get about 20 hours in. You know. You got to really give it some time.
Yeah, you got to really let it grow on you.
You really do.
But Final Fantasy IX, man, I can't wait to play that again.
Yeah, Final Fantasy
I haven't played
IX
that since it came
great.
Out, and I really liked that one. Yeah. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
They announced a bunch of board games are coming to the system. I think that's a really smart move. It doesn't interest me, but I do think that's a really smart move.
Yeah, there's definitely some, whatchamacallit, some room there for some really awesome stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I looked at that like, man, if I had friends that got together for... I do have friends that get together for game night, but I'm never there because I have kids and I always have to be home. But if I was the kind of person that had a social life, that would be a really neat thing. And then they ended it on a real up and down for me. As soon as they started showing off this a little HD Animal Crossing bit with Isabelle, I was like... Oh, man, they really did put Isabelle in Smash.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't really like that idea, because I love Isabelle as a character, but she, like, doesn't strike me as a fighter character.
Right.
And she's a clone of Villager. Like, mm-hmm. She's not an echo of Villager. She's different enough to, you know, be her own thing, but her moves are all based on Villager. And she looks adorable, and the more I think of, you know, the more I... It's neat, I guess, but... Knowing that there's so few character slots left and that they put the time and effort into putting Isabelle in there, I think she worked better as an assist trophy. Like,
yeah,
I love that character. It rubs me the wrong way as a character for Smash. I think if you're going to do Animal Crossing in Smash Brothers, the villager is the way to do it. Not necessarily Isabelle, but you know, whatever. It's not terrible. It just really was like, wow, that did nothing for me at all. It was the first Smash news that came out that just did absolutely nothing for me. It was a character that I was sure wasn't going to be in the game because I don't think she adds anything to it.
Right.
And I still feel that way, but whatever. You know, it's hard to complain about the character roster in that game.
It really is.
It's absurd.
And you don't have to use her.
Exactly. I don't. I probably will.
At some
because
point.
Because the more I learned about her, she seems like... I never really got good with Villager, and the way that they've changed up her moveset seems to be, like, a little bit more my speed. Like, her fishing rod being her side B move, you know, being a sort of a range attack thing is really interesting, and, like, you know, planning the gyroid is pretty cool, so mm-hmm. I'll probably mess with her a little bit, but honestly, you know, there's so many characters to choose from, I probably won't land on her very much.
Right.
But then they followed it up with Tom Nook chilling at his computer and announcing that Animal Crossing is officially coming to Switch next year. And I was like, all right, yeah, I'm thrilled.
Smart idea.
It is. And I've been saying it for all year when people have been saying they got to announce Animal Crossing in E3. It has to be on Switch this year. I'm like, are you out of your mind? That's totally a next year game. And next year is shaping up to be pretty big. Like... on Switch, just... like, you got Fire Emblem, which is going to be big. You've got Animal Crossing, which is going to be huge. You've got the first console mainline Pokemon game, which is going to be ginormous. And then you potentially also have Bayonetta 3 and Metroid Prime 4.
Yeah.
Like, that's a big year.
That's big. That's big.
So, like, yeah, this year may not have had a whole lot of titles, but if all that shit lands next year... And you know, we don't even know if Daemon X Machina is going to be awesome. We don't even know what else is going to come next year. That's a pretty big year for Nintendo. So
yeah,
it's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot of stuff. a lot of stuff.
That is a handful of tent poles coming out next year. So I'm excited about 2019. All right. Real quick, did you play anything super important you want to talk about?
No, just more Spider-Man and whatnot, but we can talk about that next week.
Awesome. I finished The Messenger. That game is absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. I love that game. Really, really love it. And I haven't been able to stop listening to the soundtrack since I finished the game.
I'll get to it.
The last area was, like, I don't want to spoil what it was, but I can say that there's a bunch of stuff you collect towards the end of the game. Like, there's, you know, MacGuffins you need to go collect. Mm-hmm. And I was like, everything about this game has been funny, but also really cool so far. Like, it's been just super cool ninja stuff.
Right.
And you're collecting these things that are just decidedly not cool. They're, like, kind of corny. And that was kind of rubbing me the wrong way. And then I get to the last area that incorporates those things, and I'm like, that's also corny. I don't know about this.
Really?
Like, I got into the last area, and then, like, I'd say maybe 10 to 12 seconds into the last area, I understood. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. It was, I don't want to spoil it because it was so cool. But just the way that the environment worked with the stage music, which was also starts off like immediately kind of like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm doing this. This is so stupid.
Right.
And then, like, it just starts building and wrapping in on itself, and, like, how did this get so cool so fast? I was so impressed with The Messenger. I really love that game.
All right.
Okay. Well, we've been at this for a while. Let's see. We're a good 48 minutes into this podcast, and we have a lot of games to talk about, so I think we're going to take a break and come back and do all three parts of the 10, 20, 30 back to back to back. So that's what we're going to do. We'll be back in a few. Listen to our commercials, do a little dance, get yourself a sandwich. You're listening to the Stone Age Gamer podcast from Geekade.com. Stick around. And now, here's a look at some of the other original content available right now at Geekade.com.
So, Chris, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Waveback podcast, which you're the host of...
I am?
...has been covering the Smash Brothers series for the past couple of months.
It has?
And your journey, Chris, you along with Mr. Matt Ramo, through some of the most remarkable music in all of gaming has finally come to a close. You're
it
done.
Did?
From the bleeps and bloops of Game & Watch games to the soaring score of Pilot Wings, robotic operating buddies to mind-blowing Tetris themes, it might have been, Chris, at the end of the day, your most eclectic Smash episode yet. Don't miss Waveback Episode 64, Super Smash Brothers Grand Finale.
You know, I didn't plan it that way because there's just no way I could have, but I
sure.
love the fact that it ended on Episode 64 and the first Smash Brothers game was on N64.
I mean, that's something.
I also learned a fact today. Did you know that the Nintendo Switch Online service launched on the same day as Fighter Hayabusa's birthday from Pro Wrestling?
That's pretty great. I like to think that's the only reason that game was included. They were like, all right, well, we have to.
Thank you, Power Pros Podcast.
There you go. By the way, Chris, his name is pronounced Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Cool, I got that right.
Okay, there you go.
New Japan Pro Wrestling veteran Hiroshi Tanahashi showed up and won G1 Climax 28 or 28. I don't know how they pronounce things.
It's 28.
This caught a lot of people off guard, and Geekade's own Alex Watley was one of them. What made this such a cool event? What can we expect from future events given this outcome? Do any of these words make sense to you? Because I don't know anything about wrestling and I'm very confused. Be sure to check out Omega V Tanahashi or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Feud, located in the Think Tank.
And then Switchblade came out, Ghetto. There's a whole lot of stuff going on the last couple of weeks in New Japan. Chris, there's been a lot. There's been a few developments. So, I also wanted to mention, Chris, that the slasher genre, it's gained quite a lot of popularity following the success of the original Halloween. And I don't know if you know this, but in January of 1983, There's a quaint little splatter flick called The House on Sorority Row. Found its way into theaters, hoping to cash in on some of the success of the slasher genre. It, like many other films in this genre, has become a cult classic for some, and Geekade's Ernie Rockelman, he's here to tell you why. Why don't you take a gander at celebrating 35 years of the House on Sorority Row, located in the think tank there. Right there on the website, geekade.com.
You can catch all this great stuff, plus tons of other articles, videos, podcasts, and more right now at geekade.com. And we're back. We were just briefly discussing the new Philadelphia Flyers mascot.
He's so Philly.
Somebody at a meeting said, let's make something like the Philly Fanatic. And somebody said, yes, let's make something like the Philly Fanatic. But that's great. But what if it was from hell?
What if it had done a ton of meth? Like, that was its job, to do meth.
The Philly Fanatic is, like, relatively endearing. Like, there was, you know, people that were involved in the Muppets, involved in creating the Philly Fanatic. And, you know, he's goofy. He's fun to watch. He's a good mascot.
He shakes his belly at you.
Yeah, exactly. This thing looks like it wants to, break into your house, do meth, take a dump in your mailbox, and staple your pets to your front door.
Mm-hmm,
like,
mm-hmm.
That's what this thing looks like. But that's not what we're here for. We're here to talk video games. 10/20/30 is something we do every month, where we talk about games that came out in a particular month, 10, 20, and 30 years ago, and September was a big one, so let's get cracking. 10 mm-hmm. years ago, September 2008, Wario Land Shake It.
Mm-hmm.
Did didn't you play this it. Game? You didn't play this game.
Nope.
This game, I'm still struggling to believe exists. Even though I own it and have played quite a bit of it. it defies pretty much everything Nintendo was doing with their games on the Wii at this point.
Mm-hmm.
It is a really creative two-dimensional platformer starring Wario with hand-drawn animation.
And it's tons of waggle.
Well, but smart waggle.
But see, that's the problem. They called it Shake It, and I went, yeah. Nope.
It said no thank you. They could have called it Wario Land Porn Stash, and I would have bought it as soon as I saw
would have certainly purchased it had it been called Wario Land Porn Stash. That would have been an instant purchase. Because what is that game about? I need to know.
Wow. Motion controls on that game.
Right?
Something.
Mm.
But, you know, that was the thing. You know, you get this game and you'd pick up like a bag of gold and you'd shake your controller and Wario would shake it and coins would go flying all over the place. And then you collect the coins. But it was at this gorgeous hand-drawn animation. I'm like, this is what I want Mario to look like.
Right.
What the hell? That game was great.
Mm.
I'm sad that they haven't ported it to anything, too. Because, you know, why port that game to something?
Right.
It's only, like, creative, awesome, and interesting.
It's, I mean, whatever.
Super Mario Brothers. That's even the name. I know. New Super Mario Brothers U Deluxe.
Edition Wii U 17.
Nobody knows what the U stands for. Nobody even remembers the Wii U at this point. At least nobody that isn't in. Whatever. Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. Go buy Wario Land Shake It. It's great. We had a duo of Viva Pinata releases.
Because why not?
Viva Pinata 3, Trouble in Paradise, and Viva Pinata Pocket Paradise for the 360 and DS, respectively. This was, this was one of those situations not that long ago where Rare was making games for the DS. Mm-hmm. Microsoft was publishing Nintendo DS games.
And nobody bought them.
Really?
I don't know.
I thought people bought them. I mean, I guess maybe after this one they didn't. They kept making... This is the third and fourth Viva Pinata games, so...
Weren't these, like, the last ones, though?
I think they were, yeah.
Yeah, these were, like, the ones where people were like, all right, we're actually kind of sick of this.
Yeah, I think the well...
Stop
they ran,
doing this.
Ran that dry. There's no more of that.
I don't know. I never even played the original ones, so I'm not the target audience for that, so... You know.
Yeah, I don't care.
Yeah.
Viva Pinata was not for me.
What was for you, though, Chris, is the next game on the list.
Star Wars The Force Unleashed.
Yeah, this game's dope.
This game was pretty cool.
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit.
It was not without its problems.
No, sure.
But I did very briefly play the Wii version, which was a terrible idea. Yeah, it was, I thought, hey, lightsaber game, motion controls.
Yeah.
When we all saw that, that's what we wanted. We wanted to hold a freaking lightsaber in our hands, and, well, we got it, and it was, well, not fantastic. So I played through this game on 360, I think. 90% sure I played. It was either 360 or PS3. I'm pretty sure it was 360.
Yeah.
And it was pretty fun. It had some neat mythology behind it. Besides that, you know, Starkiller was a pretty bland-ass white dude character. He was just like,
yeah, bland. He's kind of meh. But the gameplay was cool. Throwing around Star Destroyers was cool.
No, throwing around Star Destroyers was not cool. That part was a pain in the ass.
But it was cool that you could.
In the trailer, it was so awesome. And then you get there and it's just like this giant, long, painful, boring sequence where there's like, all right, you got to move this Star Destroyer. Oh no, ships are coming in from the side. You got to stop and fight them. But catch the Star Destroyer. Start all over again. That part was a pain in the ass.
But you could still. I wanted it to be
so cool, and it just wasn't cool.
Yeah, there were definitely some design choices that were like, all right, you.
Why am I fighting these stormtroopers? Why am I hitting these stormtroopers with a lightsaber 30, 40 times?
Yeah.
And they're not blocking. They got shields. They're just like, I should be cutting through them like butter, but they're just like taking damage like I'm hitting them with a freaking sparkler or something.
I do like this game. I like a lot of the way it looked. I liked a lot of the way that it moved. I did want it to be God of War with a lightsaber. Like, just send fodder at me that I can just mow through. You know, I like the way Starkiller fought. You know, like the
I like the way he held his lightsaber was
like
really cool.
It was cool. Like there was a lot of really cool in this game. Force Unleashed 2 kind of did some things better, but then kind of did some things worse. There was so much.
I played very little of Force Unleashed 2.
Well, you and most people. There was so much potential in this game for, like, this should have been the biggest game of 2008, and instead it was like, that was cool. It was a cool game.
Yeah, it was a neat thing. It sold, you know, a butt ton of copies. Yeah. But therein lies your problem. This was released on PS2, PS3, Wii, 360, DS, and PSP.
Yeah, that's too many systems.
You're just splitting yourself. And if they had really focused on like one version, if they had just focused, obviously they couldn't skip Wii at this point because it was the biggest thing on the planet.
Right.
But if they had just focused on a PS3 and 360 thing, like,
it would have been incredible.
If this game had been really refined, it could have been something truly special. And instead, it just felt like your average multi-platform third-party thing with a lot of cool Star Wars stuff dished in there, which was neat.
Which is still good, you know?
Yeah, it's still good. Not as good as I had hoped it would be.
Yeah.
And not something I ever really plan on going back to.
Sure. Sure. That's fair.
The next game on the list, though, was exactly what we were just talking about, and that was De Blob for the Wii.
This
was a third-party game that was designed specifically for one platform, and it was very polished and very fun.
Steven Spielberg, right? Wasn't this
thing? No, that was Boom Blob.
Oh, okay. Okay.
This was a THQ joint, I believe, and it was about you were a blob, and you lived in this city where these evil guys had stolen all the color.
Bunch of pricks. You would
like get colors and then smack yourself against walls and floors and basically color in the entire city. And it was a really fun game. I really enjoyed the first one. And it was eventually ported to other platforms as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they approached this in the very smart manner, which was, we are going to make this original property. We're going to build it around one piece of hardware, do a really good job. And then if it's successful, we'll put it on other platforms. Which is what they did, and it worked out well for them because this game did very well on Wii and wound up getting a sequel, which did considerably less well.
Yeah.
But it has just recently been remastered on all the current platforms. It's on PS4, Xbox One, and Switch.
And definitely worth checking out.
It definitely is. I've thought about rebuying this game a couple of times, but, you know.
And it's like, what, 15, 20 bucks?
I think it's more than that. I think it's like 30, and that's why I haven't really dove right into it, because You know, it yeah, is a full a remaster of a full game, so I get why it's the price that it is, but yeah,
but still,
there's so much other stuff, and I've already played this game. You know, yeah. If I had never played this before, like if you've never played it before and you're looking for a good retail type of, you know, 3D platforming experience, I can recommend that game at that price. You'll get your money's worth out of it. But if you've already played it, that's a different story.
Yeah.
Then we got Mega Man 9.
Which was just so cool.
Yes, it
that
was.
That happened.
That was awesome.
Game's hard as shit.
Yeah, it is.
I do like it a lot, but damn,
I
is it
love
hard.
Mega Man 9. I love it a lot more than I love Mega Man 10. I just recently talked a lot about this game when I was doing the Mega Man Legacy collections.
Yeah.
But I am still, I am slightly bummed in retrospect that it's taken until now to get an actual modern Mega Man since Mega Man 8.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time, this throwback to the 8-bit style was just so cool.
And it was one of those things, like, we were just not expecting it at that point. Of, like, because Capcom has kind of historically dropped the ball on Mega Man.
Uh-huh.
You know, for a long time, it's been like, why do they keep shitting on Mega Man? That's not cool. Like, he's an awesome character, and people love him. Stop giving me Star Force Ultra Dance Squad, or whatever the last stupid collectible thing was that they put out. So when this was announced and it had, I mean, just the marketing around it, the awful retro, like real life man in robot costume art that was the quote unquote box for it, was just so cool and so unexpected.
They did everything.
They
right
totally
with this.
Got it.
Yeah,
like Mega Man 9 is a game that is totally made by people that get it for people that love it.
Exactly. Great, great, great game. Still good today.
Still good today. Still really hard.
Yeah, really hard. Kirby Superstar Ultra hit for Nintendo DS.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, you know I don't have anything to say about that.
That's, yeah, I really liked Kirby Superstar on Super Nintendo. I played a little bit of the Ultra and was like, all right, well, okay, good for you.
That's a thing you did.
Yeah, I just didn't see the... At that point, I was really enjoying the new Kirby games that were coming out, and remaking Superstar seemed weird to me because Superstar was just this kind of collection of smaller Kirby games, which always kind of felt weird to me to begin with. Like, it was neat that it had a relatively full remake of Kirby's Dream Land in it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was kind of, I don't know, Kirby Superstar is a weird thing. I don't think it's aged extraordinarily well. It's fun, but I would have just rather had a new Kirby adventure game, not a remake of Superstar. I thought it was a strange thing to remake, but they did a good job of it, so hooray for them. Oh, this next one. I have wanted to play this game since it came out, and I still haven't because I've never imported it. Disaster Day of Crisis.
What is this about? Because I know nothing about it, but looking at screenshots, it reminds me of this really awesome PS3 game called I Am Alive, and I don't know if it's anything like that at all.
It's a lot more Japanese than that.
Okay.
This game is insane, and I want it so badly. Like, I heard it's not great. It's from Monolith Soft, the people who did the Xenoblade Chronicles games.
Right, which is kind of a big studio.
They clearly put a ton of effort into this game. And it plays out like a really, really cheesy action movie. I mean, there's like fire tornadoes in this game. Like, there's just some sort of series of natural disasters happening in this city. And you're like a paramedic and you're going around trying to save people. But there's also like this really Japanese drama story of, like, you know, your brother died and you're trying to solve the mystery or some crap like that. It's so corny. It's so over the top. And it was a really good looking game for a Wii game.
Right.
And like, you fight bears. There's like bears loose in the city or something. And like, all
right, well, never mind. It's a little less like I Am Alive.
Tornadoes will show up, and then like the tornadoes will go over a fire, and then they'll turn into fire tornadoes and chase you around. And like,
it's just the worst kind of tornado.
Give me this game. I want this game so badly. This game was supposed to come out in America, and Reggie Fils-Aimé looked at it and said, now we're good. This game was like going was to come out, and Nintendo of America said no thank you. And damn it, I'm so pissed because I wanted this game so bad.
This seems like an American kind of thing.
It seems like it was just the right... But to be fair, this was, you know, Nintendo of America also said to Xenoblade Chronicles Pandora's Tower and, crap, what was the other one? Xenoblade Chronicles and Last Story. They said no thank you to all those as well, which all three of those games did eventually wind up coming to the platform and did pretty darn well, especially considering they came out way past the system's prime.
Right, right.
Disaster, however, was left on the floor, probably because it's apparently a terrible game. But damn it, I want it anyway.
Fair enough.
Silent Hill Homecoming came out for PS3 and Xbox 360. I am not a Silent Hill fan, so I know nothing about this one.
It was more Silent Hill, from what I remember. I don't remember this game very well. I don't think I finished it. I think this was one of those things where it was like, oh, there's a modern Silent Hill. That's cool. Silent Hill's not Resident Evil, you know, has kind of always how I felt about it. And I know that is blasphemy for some people, you know, but it was Silent Hill.
Cool.
It existed. Neat. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's creepy and dark and it looks great. That one thing the Silent Hill games always had going for them is that they looked really good.
Yeah, like good atmosphere.
Yeah, they managed to do really creepy stuff without it getting overly cheesy. Because there's a lot of weird shit in the Silent Hill games that could have gone like, okay, we're done here, you know, but like it never really crossed that line. So, I don't know. I'm not the biggest Silent Hill fan either, so maybe we're not the right two to be talking about this, Chris.
Are we the right two to talk about anything, really?
Yes.
Yes.
Everything else on this
Everything
list.
Everything else, including Sonic.
We are literally the best people to talk about it.
Sonic Chronicles The Dark Brotherhood came out for DS, and how did this go wrong?
Because it was a Sonic game on the DS?
Do you know what this one is?
No.
This was the Sonic RPG from the people who made Mass Effect.
Oh.
This should have been the Super Mario RPG of Sonic games.
That's how it went wrong. Have you played Mass Effect? It's not that good.
I haven't, but I know there's a lot of people. I have played Mass Effect, not through Mass Effect, because I couldn't read. We've talked about this. I couldn't read the damn game because I was still playing on SD TVs at the time. Sonic Chronicles seemed like a really cool thing. I really liked the art direction, and I liked the idea of them trying to do the Super Mario RPG treatment to the Sonic franchise and giving it to a proven team that had made it a couple of really successful games at that point.
Yeah.
But I didn't even play it because everybody I spoke to said, you know what? It's actually just not very good. It really just kind of fell flat. And that was a real bummer for me.
Yeah. I mean, I certainly didn't play it. I'm not huge into the Sonic games. If you're going to give me an RPG team, like if I had my pick, BioWare is not the team that I want making a Sonic game. You know,
I don't know
who it is. Maybe like the guys behind Wild Arms or something like that. There's just Sonic's not that serious. It's not that deep. And it could like not that it can't be taken seriously, but there's a lot of I don't know the right word for BioWare games, but there's a lot of BioWare-ness in BioWare games, and it just, I can't imagine it felt right in Sonic.
Yeah. It was weird situation.
I don't know.
I like the cover to this game.
It does
I like
look
the art direction, but yeah, that's a shame. Last thing from September 2008, Rock Band 2.
Fuck yeah, Rock Band.
Yeah, Xbox 360. PS3, it came out in October. PS2 and Wii came out in December. But it initially launched on the 360 in September of 2008. And, you know.
It's awesome.
Yeah. Rockman's cool.
I mean, it's one of those things, like, we've talked about it before, but, like, Rock Band was just kind of this thing that captured a moment in time where it was like the Pokemon Go, where it was like, I'm going to go over to my friend's house, and we're just going to rock out for a little bit. And everybody's going to be stupid and silly, and we're just having fun. Like, there's
no... You
gotta
love that.
There was just a level of pure joy in the Rock Band and Rock Band 2 and Guitar Hero World Tour, whatever the one was that had all the instruments and whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just a fucking blast, which is
meanwhile,
just so
today
rare.
I walked into a Five Below, and that Guitar Hero live thing mm-hmm. was in Five Below, like with the guitar.
Yeah.
$5.
Yeah.
And you went, I still didn't buy it.
And you walked by and went, ugh, I don't want that.
I looked at it for a second. I was like, oh, they have the Wii U version.
No.
Yeah, I'm still going to pass.
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
I don't need this in my house. I don't have anywhere to put this. I'm out.
I got kids now. I don't have people coming over.
All right, back into the Wayback Machine. Let's go to September of 1998, where the PlayStation saw the release of a creepy game called Parasite Eve.
I love Parasite Eve.
You know what? I remember loving Parasite Eve, but to this day, I don't think I could tell you anything about it besides a really, really grotesque rat mutating FMV sequence that haunts my nightmares to this day.
I mean, sure, there was that. There was also the really cool way that the battles played out.
Wasn't there some sort of dome involved?
Yeah, it was an active time battle. Like, it was an RPG battle system, but they were active time battles, but you could move around within a zone around the enemy or enemies that you were fighting, and you could like kind of pause the game as you moved around in there to call up your actions and whatever. It was cool.
How did this series disappear?
Squeenix.
That's a weird thing. Like, I remember both of these games doing very well on the PlayStation, and then we just didn't hear from it again. I think there was like a mobile game a few years back.
Yeah, it was one of those things like when Square and Enix merged, this was one of the things that got kind of left by the wayside. Like, you know, there are certain things when we look back, like why hasn't there been a new Parasite Eve? Why the fuck hasn't there been a new Dino Crisis? Like, why is that a thing
that's
not happening
also
anymore?
Weird.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's really. I mean, I get that Dino Crisis 3 as an Xbox exclusive that takes place in space was probably a misstep for the series.
Sure.
But this is Capcom we're talking about. They'll make a sequel to anything.
Right. You know, and Parasite Eve kind of felt like one of those, like, oh, we've got a new franchise that will continue to see improvements. And I was just, it was very cool. It was,
the main
it had
character,
a great story.
Aya was like popular. People yep. liked her. She was a good character design. Like, this had everything going for it.
Yeah.
Don't know what happened.
This will be one of those things that will, you know, pop back up at an E3 and be like, oh shit.
Oh, wow.
New Parasite
Eve. Hey, maybe Parasite Eve will be on the PlayStation Classic.
It, analog.
Oh, you're right. Darn this thing.
Yeah.
Spyro the Dragon came out.
Huge.
September of 1998. That was a big fat deal.
Cannot undersell how important Spyro was for establishing PlayStation as like, no, your kids can play on this too.
Yeah, that was like, yeah, Super Mario 64 is great, but we also have stuff like that. And
yeah,
that was a big deal back then.
And Spyro, you know, was good. It was fun.
Exactly.
It was cute. It was charming. It controlled well. It looked good. It's one of the few games from that time period when you can go back and be like, all right, this is not hideously ugly.
Yeah, definitely looked good for its time. And like you said, it was good, which was really what Sega was missing on the Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they were never going to take Nintendo down, but PlayStation took Nintendo down because they didn't just release games of, you know, types of games that weren't on their platforms. They released types of games that were the things Nintendo was known for, but they did them well.
Right.
You know, they had Crash and Spyro, and even if I didn't care for the original Crash Bandicoot because I don't think it's very good, there's no denying that a lot of people did, and that was a big deal. It was a very smart move. Good on him.
Yeah, it's a well-made game. All three of them are good.
Yeah,
all three Spyro games. But that first one was, you know, it was
classic.
It was proof.
Yeah, this was a really big month for PlayStation. Not a big month for anything else. NFL Blitz came out on PlayStation,
which was a fun football game. Not as fun as, you know, Tecmo Bowl and Tecmo Super Bowl, but
it was a fun non simulation sports game.
Yeah,
I liked that. This was a ridiculous arcade game that just was screw the rules
football,
and it was pretty fun.
Football, like when your dad used to watch it.
That's right.
Just men helmets. Killing each other.
With knives.
None of this flag football bullshit Fire. That's going yeah. on now.
It was the NBA jam of the NFL.
It was.
This next one. Ninja Shadow of Darkness for PlayStation.
Never played it.
I have always had a problem with this game because there is no other kind of shadow.
I mean, sure. Have you played this game?
I've played the demo for this game because it came with, like, everything. Eidos pumped the crap out of this. Like, this was their next property because they had Tomb Raider, and now they're going to make these ninja games. And it's like, oh, cool, there's, like, a new Ninja Gaiden game on PlayStation. And it's, like, not really at all. It was just kind of a 3D hack and slash that had a very generic ninja character. And I played a few minutes of the demo and said, this isn't Ninja Gaiden. Screw this game. and moved on with my life.
Yeah, there was a gigantic marketing push around this game. Like, it was supposed to be a big deal. And I don't know anybody who's like, yeah, but have you played Ninja?
Yeah, the other problem with this was that I think the original Tenchu wasn't far away. Either it had already come out or was coming out. And then you also had Bushido Blade. Like, there was just better.
Man, do I love both of those games.
Exactly.
Rumor has it that somebody wrote about Tenchu for Kung Fu Fridays. I don't know who that could have been. Maybe if you went to geekade.com and checked it out, you could find some Tenchu stuff.
His name is Bran Brian or something
Brandian. That's right.
Something like that.
Mark Brandanowitz, I think, is...
And then you know what? There was another game that I think Brand Dryan wrote about, Rival Schools.
Oh, I love Rival Schools.
Cool-ass PlayStation fighter from Capcom.
I went a little bit more in-depth with it in a Kung Fu Fridays, which you can find on the website. But
that was the one you paired up with, what the hell is that kids killing each other movie?
Battle Royale,
that yes. was it.
What a cool game, though. Like, a cool story. The character designs are great, even if they don't look so good in the actual in-game models. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it was just kind of that ugly polygonal thing. But there's a lot of really, really good stuff in the Rival Schools games.
I didn't spend a ton of time with any of either of the Rival Schools games, mm-hmm. but I did spend a lot of time with Tatsunoko versus Capcom, which included the main character of the Rival Schools games as a playable character, which I still don't understand why he wasn't put into the Marvel versus Capcom games, because what a great character.
Yeah.
But the neat little piece of trivia I have for that is that character, at least in Tatsunoko versus Capcom, was voiced by the same voice actor that did the grunts and yells that Link makes in Ocarina of Time.
Well, that is ridiculous.
It's one of those things that, like, people looked into, because when they started playing Tatsunoko versus Capcom, and they're like, wait a minute, that sounds really familiar. Is that Link? What? Because it's such, you know, it's one of those, those things, those yells and stuff. They're just kind of, like, ingrained in everyone's brain, and, well, that's why.
It's a dope game. And I like Rival Schools a lot.
Finally, in September of 1998, we got Cruisin' World for Nintendo 64.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cruisin' USA
games were popular.
They were, and I liked them because I like simple, stupid arcade racing games.
Yep.
And this is a pre-Burnout world we're talking about. So the Cruisin' games were just a hoot. I still think they're really fun to play.
They are really fun. Like, if I walk by and I see an arcade cruising machine, I'm playing it.
Yeah, pretty much. They seem to be mostly broken these days, but whenever I do come across one that works, I will throw my quarters in there and do a couple of races. Because they're just silly, stupid, good, solid racing fun.
And the home versions were pretty damn good, too.
They really were. But they just weren't enough to hold water against the PlayStation.
No, well, I mean, so much of the cruising games was like, you know, double tapping the accelerator and doing the flips and that sort of stuff. And it was fun when you were doing it in the arcade. And doing it on a console, it just felt kind of, I don't know, it just felt weird. You know, you could still do it, but it just wasn't
right. It didn't have the spectacle of the arcade, you know?
Yeah.
It was, Yeah, I don't know.
Still good.
Are cool.
Enjoyable.
Still, good, still solid.
But like Ridge Racer was way more fun at home.
And you know, like this the month right here sums up exactly where Nintendo and PlayStation were at this time.
Yeah.
PlayStation had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 solid releases. And the Nintendo 64 had Cruisin' World, which is pretty good.
Which is, you know, fun.
Yeah, fun. All right, let's jump back to September of 1988. POW came out in the arcades.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awesome, awesome beat-em-up.
It is awesome.
Love me some POW. I actually have never played the arcade version. I've only played the NES one.
We do not spend enough time on beat-em-ups on our website. Maybe that's the thing we're missing, Chris.
It is. Well, you know what? There's just not enough of them to really elongate it. But I bet somebody could write a series about beat-em-ups.
Disagree with that entirely. Somebody might be working on that. Anyway.
Somebody might be.
So POW, SNK, just doing awesome classic SNK, ridiculous, like two dudes taking on the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awesome.
It was awesome. That's a great beat-em-up. And really a great NES port, too.
It is a really good NES port, which is surprising because the arcade version had a lot of really, really nice animation, you know, something that SNK was obviously known for. You know, everything just looked really good and moved really smoothly. And the NES port actually did a pretty admirable job of...
Yeah, very big sprites in this
game.
Yeah. Very, very well handled. The music was handled well. It looked good. It sounded good. It played super tight. And the SNK NES games were really solid. You know?
They really were.
Alpha Mission was really great. Guerrilla War. So big old smiley face there. We also have Golgo 13 hit the NES.
This game I always had a weird relationship with. Like, I always wanted to like it more than I ended up liking it.
I have never played it.
Really?
I have it. It's one of those games that I was convinced to buy several times over by a lot of people. Like, oh, you got to play Golgo 13. It's such a super cool game. And then I got it. And I just, there's something about it just never really captured me enough to even play it past, like, much past the title screen. So I don't know.
Yeah. Like, I always, like, did, you know, the first, like, 10, 15 minutes. And I was like, this is cool. And I feel like I should be getting more out of this. But I just, like, man, I don't know. It might have been one of those things where I'm just like, oh, I'm too young. You know, like, it just, I wasn't a fan of the anime or the manga that it was based on. It was based on a manga, right? I'm not making that up.
Yes, I believe it was based on a manga.
Okay. So maybe I just, like, I just didn't know enough about that, you know, because this came out when we were like 7 or 8 years old, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I don't know. This is the one, am I mistaken in what I'm thinking of? I might be thinking of like the Moffat conspiracy or something like that, where
I think they were related.
Like, in the beginning, you're like walking through and you're like jumping behind bushes or trash cans or some shit.
I just don't know.
Am I totally off base on that? Damn, I'm gonna
really
have to go back
and
find out.
I was
hoping
you knew more about this game than I did.
Yeah, no. Like I said, it's just always something I wanted to know more and like more. But
Mayfat Conspiracy is a sequel to Golgo 13.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think I got it.
Yeah, me neither.
All right.
Not for me.
That's fair.
Meanwhile, Toobin came out in the arcades.
See, kids,
I love this game.
Back in the day, we used to live in a world where things were so simple that you could make an arcade game about lazily floating down a river, and people loved the shit out of it.
Like, it was awesome. You did two people bumping into one another and just like auto-scrolling game, and you steer with both hands and just kind of try to steer yourself safely down this river and kind of race. This game's so stupid, and it's so great. I love Toobin.
It was a simpler time, Chris.
It really was.
It was a time where you could, like, actually watch the news with your family and not have to send your young daughters out of the room because there's too much to explain.
Yeah. Good times.
Not saying I had to do that with my children the other day, but like, well, that's a bunch of words I don't want to have to explain to a 9-year-old. Go upstairs. Toobin.
Finally. because this episode's been going on for way too long. The last game we have is Adventure Island for NES. September of 1988, Adventure Island. Master Higgins was unleashed upon the world.
And nothing has made sense since.
Nothing at all.
Nothing in this fucking
Don't
series.
Don't ever dive into the actual lineage of the Adventure Island games, because it is a rat's nest of names like Wonder Boy, Monster World, Adventure Island, based on monsters.
That's right. Don't you dive into it, because the Stone Age gamer is going to do it for you in November.
We sure are. But wow, oh, wowie. This is a... The first Adventure Island game is a pretty cool game.
It is a cool game. It's very
charming.
Literally
the same game as the original Monster Boy.
It is.
Wonder Boy, sorry.
It's very charming. It's a great character design. It is great classic Hudson Soft of just like, yeah, these guys are a big deal developer, you know,
yeah.
Or they were a big deal developer. And
now they're owned by Konami.
Yes. And so they don't do anything anymore, which is unfortunate. But really cool characters, really bright sprites, like really,
yeah,
really nice looking graphics, good music. Could you ride the skateboard in this one, or was the skateboard not till
yes.
the second one?
Skateboard was this
one. Okay, skateboard, which, you know, in the 80s, like, if you put a skateboard in something, it was automatically awesome.
Yep.
Cool little critters you could ride on, cool level designs. This is a good game.
I think the riding critters was in the sequels.
Was it? Okay.
This one was just collect food, get to the end of the level, throw hammers and boomerang.
See, at this point, it all just blends together. We do have to do this in November, Chris. This is our
We do, and we will.
And it'll
right
take
there,
at least three episodes.
It will. Just to untangle this rat's nest. But we're going to do it, but we're not doing it tonight, because that is the end of our show. Boy, oh boy. I could have kept going.
I know.
There's so much to talk about.
There really is.
I could spend an entire episode just gushing about The Messenger, but someday.
Maybe one.
That is our show. Ladies and gentlemen, join us next week when Geekade's 31 Days of Halloween will be upon us. Dan and I will be doing something Halloween related all month. We haven't decided yet.
No, Chris, we have decided. It's a tease. We're just not going to let you know because it's spooky.
That's right. Yes.
Whoa.
It's going to scare you. I'm sure it'll be great. We'll come up with something and it'll be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But once again, you can get in touch with us at mail@geekade.com, as well as all flavors of social media that we inhabit. You can like us on Facebook, find us on Instagram @Geekade, subscribe to our YouTube and Twitch channels for all our latest video content, and follow us on Twitter @the_Geekade. You can also find us individually on Twitter. I'm @GeekadeChris, that's Geekade, K-R-I-S, and Dan, where can we find you?
@GeekadeDan.
If you're interested in more information about anything we discussed tonight, be sure to check out our show notes. And while you're at it, you can also subscribe to this and any of our other wonderful podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, where if you're super nice, you can leave us a review, because any and all feedback is welcome and appreciated. We'd also like to thank our intrepid editor, Evan, for making the show listenable for all you folks. And we'd like to thank Mark TDK Knight for our show's theme. You can check him out on SoundCloud and Bandcamp, or his website, which we have a link to in the show notes. Again, always remember to keep your eyes on Geekade.com for even more fresh original content. Good Lord, I'm tired. I can't wait to go to bed. That's it, everybody. On behalf of Dan and myself, keep playing games.